This is Scott Becker with the Becker Business Podcast. Thrilled today to feature Lola Wright. Lola's the podcast, the genius behind Find Your Fierce and Loving. She's also got a personal, she's a great speaker and author, interacts with all kinds of community organizations. She, by background, is also an ordained minister. I'm going to talk to Lola about what she's working on now, what she's most excited about, and a little bit more. Lola, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Yeah, really excited to be here. Thanks for having me, Scott. Most of my work is around transition, crisis, conflict, and growth. So I work with organizational leaders, entrepreneurs, and creatives, people that are, you know, realizing that the ways they've been doing things have gotten them to this point, but likely won't be the same practices, strategies, and techniques to get them to where they're headed. And so, you know, in my experience, people can get pretty patterned around suffering, and that can sometimes lead to great growth and change. We're not actually on the planet to be in a perpetual state of suffering, and I really support people in helping move beyond that.
And talk about, you've got this great brand, LolaWright.com. Talk about what you're excited about, what you're working on now. Is it individual coaching? Is it groups? Is it just trying to make sure your vision is felt throughout the world? What are you focused on now? What are your top priorities this year?
There are three things that I put my attention on. One, providing content that is what I call like affirmatively disruptive. So there's so much content on the planet that is really designed to sort of perpetuate drama. And I like to put stuff out that supports people in curiosity, wonder, imagination, and creativity. That can occur in a business setting, in a family setting, in a couple. Coaching. So I do a lot of group coaching. My preference is group facilitation and community. I think that we have lots of opportunities to forge new avenues of community, especially given all the transitions that we've seen over the course of the last year. And community can show up in really unique ways in organizational settings and in business settings. But most of us are also looking for more interesting kinds of communities. Like the days of sort of social clubs and bridge parties, they don't satisfy people in the same ways that they may have historically.
Content, coaching, and community. And talk about that on community. It seems like community is so different today than it was. And we all know as you get to a certain age, you end up as part of different communities throughout your existence. You know, if you've got someone that's suffering from an illness, you end up as part of that community. If you've got someone suffering from a substance disorder, you end up as part of that community. You know, if you end up, you know, single, married, divorced, you end up as part of different communities. You end up with all these different communities throughout your life, but they're very different than they were maybe when we were, you know, it's more of an evolution what communities you're part of. Then at one point, you know, somebody might have gone to the Masons Club, you know, just as an example from a different generation, for 100 Tuesdays in a row for their whole life and visited with people there. And so what is, and now communities, you know, on Facebook, it's one community, on this place, it's another community. What does it mean today? What is it to be part of a community today?
Well, you know, I did a TEDx talk a couple of years ago on the deconstruction of religious frameworks. You know, that religious spaces used to be a place that people experienced community. And all statistics show that that is in a massive deconstruction. And so it's a great question. Like, if the old ways are no longer thriving, then what are the new ways? And I think that, you know, even technology platforms have seen this. I think most people go to Facebook now, not for what it started out as, which was a social network, individual to individual, but more, groups is where that thrives. And so I think that people are realizing, wow, I no longer have to create community out of obligation. You know, historically, we've done community out of just sort of rote practice. And as people are realizing, like, wow, I have more choice. I have more agency. I could actually create relationships that aren't just like checking boxes. I'm like, I have a membership community that gathers weekly via Zoom, and it's not, there's no obligation. Come as you want, you know, don't come, watch on demand, watch live, whatever you want to do. And it's really about meeting people where they are. So focusing on, you know, hey, I'm interested in growing as a human being. I'm interested in realizing that I can use my influence for good in the world. I want to both, you know, take responsibility for my own life, and I want to help create a better experience for all human beings on the planet. And so people are very affinity-based. You know, like I belong to a social club that's specifically for creative entrepreneurs. And it's not about golf. It's not about tennis. And nothing wrong with those things, but there's just there's really sort of an endless amount of ways that people can find their space to thrive. And I think that's really what I want to invite people into over and over and over again. Is like, if there is an area of your life that is not like aligned with who you really want to be, there is something out there for you. We do not have to suffer through just sort of going along to get along. Find your people. Find where you come alive. Find your sense of purpose and contribution.
And let me ask you another question, Lola, about communities. Do you have concern about the politicalization, excuse my pronunciation of the word, of communities? Wherever they mm-hmm. become so red or blue, if you're part of this, you're red, if you're part of that, you're blue. And it you know, it used to be very fluid. You were a Democrat on some things, mm-hmm. Republican on other things. Now people label you so hard. Oh, you think this or you're that. Do you have a concern about the politicization of these communities and how much of them become circular, that you end up communities around that touch somehow or another some political gene, mm-hmm. and it causes horrible disruption in relationships?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the greatest concern is the way that media dances with the reptilian brain. So we are hardwired as human beings to perceive threat. And when we are sort of asleep to that tendency in ourselves, we're always sort of, looking, panning our view, what's the threat, what's the threat? And that's happening very unconsciously. When you then have media outlets that are, incentivized to create drama, it's sort of a perfect storm. I think the biggest thing that we are lacking in the, human experience right now is nuance. And so we're just, we are very this or that, black or white, red or blue, rich or poor, gay or straight. And it is a very sort of primal reptilian tendency that lives in us as a way to create safety. And ironically, it creates a ton of destruction. So I think that as human beings really have an opportunity to evolve here and not be so subjected by these drama-based media outlets, really.
Well, it's so true. What you just say is the mind has a natural desire to organize, and the more it can simplify and organize, the easier. The problem is it's led to this binary thinking. When this party says it's bad or good, and it's like that party says it's bad or good, you're absolutely right. In the media outlets, whether it's CNN, Fox, MSNBC, whoever it is, the newspapers, the everything plays into that so hard. And so things that should have been just regular news and become narratives, and they play into one side or the other. And you're absolutely right. I mean, I saw a fascinating stand on CNN that where with President Trump out of office, without them having the binary thing to point to mm-hmm. rightfully or wrongfully so, the ratings have dropped 50%. And so they're very incentivized. All of us are. I mean, Fox has got its own struggles, CNN's got its own struggles. But without that clear, constant thing to point to that drives ratings, it's very much Pavlovian. It gets ratings, they hit it hard. And it plays to one side of the audience, but that side of the audience is big enough for a country of 300 million people, 330 million people. And the same thing on the right wing too. Just, you see on the right wing all these different news outlets that are just like literally insanity, and they play to a part of the brain that says, oh my God, they're taking away our freedom of life. They're doing this, they're doing that. And it plays hard to a group that's very receptive to it. So it's a fascinating perspective on both sides of the table.
I mean, many of us were raised with the idea of like walk a day in another person's shoes, and that's how you can create understanding. And somehow we've lost that. What I know to be true is that like, every human being you could sit down, and if you actually got in their world and you understood how they got to be in this now moment as they are, it would make perfect sense. So you know, the suffering that exists in the human experience is undergirded by seeing someone as an opponent, an enemy, the other. I mean, I see this in my marriage. I'm married to someone who I love and adore. And it occurred to me a few years ago, I am in relationship with him as if we are playing a beautiful singles match. And sometimes I want to destroy him with my serve. And sometimes we have a beautiful volley. But I could flip the whole context of our marriage if I remembered that we are actually a world-class doubles team. That's a very different paradigm, you know? So when we're organizing ourselves and walking on the planet and perceiving our opponents in micro ways, I mean, you could be standing in line at Starbucks and you don't get your drink right, and it's like you're ready to obliterate the barista. And it's like, wow, have we completely lost our orientation around our humanity?
It's a fascinating, fascinating perspective. And the concept of walking in someone else's shoes, I'll work with the politicization again on this issue as well. If you're on Fox News and you see a poor person, and you're not walking in their shoes, the narrative might be they should be working more. They're not doing what they should be doing. They're not trying. And the reality is, if you walk that person's shoes, you'd be like, oh my goodness, this is difficult. This is difficult. There's a lot of things. And it's good and bad. It's not all like painted. It's not, I'm just on welfare. It's, you're a wonderful person trying your best to make it through in a challenging world and trying to survive on $12 an hour is almost impossible. It's impossible.
That's right.
But you have to walk in there to feel that way. It can't just be like, oh my God, they're trying to minimum wage. It's going to kill us. Because the reality is no one can live on $12-$13 an hour. No one can really raise a family in that today. Not in the United States, not with the cost of things here. It's just not doable. It's not an argument to raise a minimum wage, but it's a reality. You can't live on that. And you can't compete with that if people are paying $4 an hour in China. It just doesn't work. The flip side is, if you watch CNN, the narrative is every wealthy person, anybody that makes more than 100,000 years, is a horrible person. It's just a horrible person by nature because they make money. And they've bought into the American dream of trying to make a living and provide for your family. You're a horrible person. But the reality, again, is if you walk in a person's shoes, you know, there's different studies in this. They might be, you know, 3% happier because they've at least been able to take care of their family's needs. But there's not much more. They're a person who's got all kinds of challenges and issues and angst and issues like everybody else does. Mm-hmm. And this idea that you mentioned of walking in the other person's shoes has been so lost in our society culture. It's, you know, you go on Facebook, you, it's so funny. You mentioned you go on Facebook, you used to do it to chat or meet people or, you know, find somebody else at your school or something else. Now you have to go on it to argue with other people. You know, it's insane.
It's so toxic.
And I love your point in relationships about, are you in a singles match with your partner or are you on a doubles match where you're on the same team? You know, and if you ask men and women, or you might say even like, you know, you play doubles or mixed doubles. You know, my daughter would tell you the worst experience of her life is playing mixed doubles tournament to the father. That's the worst thing that could possibly happen because, like, oh my God, worst teammate ever. I can't believe he missed that shot, you know, and stuff like that. You know, after you're obliterating me in singles, I'm playing doubles, but it is what it is. What do you look like this year? You do so many interesting things. I mean, it's really just a pleasure to visit with you. What are you most excited about this year? What are you focused on this year?
Well, you know, it's so interesting that we scheduled this for when we did, because my husband's business has doubled in this last pandemic year, and it'll double again this year. And his company is growing very quickly, and it's incredibly exciting. And, you know, even when it's good news, there's still opportunity for lots of breakdown. And so he has recently asked me to bring the work that I do in organizational settings into his company to just sort of navigate some of the dynamics that they're seeing as a team. So very recently, I've started to support his company and his employees with some of their own culture stuff. And so, you know, you have two extremes in his business. You have sort of the business development where it's like, we can do anything, you know, we're going to take over the world. And then you have, you know, some of the more operational people who are like, this is terrible. Whoa, slow down. And so what I'm enjoying right now is really helping people bring their gifts and talents together, understand how they are able to work within one another's gifts and strengths. And again, even in a business that's thriving, How can we see each other as allies and not opponents? You know, oftentimes it's not unusual that a sales team feels sort of mired by an operations team, and an operations team can feel sort of disregarded by a sales team. And so how can you create a sense of collaboration and not see each other as just like completely annoying or frustrating to your success? So that's what I'm working on right now, is helping my husband's business go through big, big growing pains at a very rapid rate, and do so without a lot of casualties.
Well, it's the highest compliment that a partner in a marriage asks the other partner to be involved in their business. A lot don't do that for a lot of reasons. So it's the highest compliment in trust and integrity and sort of respect. You know, the fifth thing you mentioned, the growth issue in this dynamic conflict between sales and operations teams. You know, often the sales team wants to go 100 miles an hour in selling, and the ops team has to deliver. And so the challenge of meshing those two, so they become, so the sales team doesn't feel like, oh my God, the ops team's not delivering, they're holding us back. And the ops team doesn't feel like the sales team, oh my God, they're selling things they have no business selling. You know, just they're just, you know, we don't have the capacity, the resources. Those are real challenges in any growth business. And it's it's a constant fine balance to be strengthening the two at the same time in parallel with some reasonable degrees. It's never gonna be perfect. It's never gonna be perfectly in sync, but at least rational in sync and understanding of each side's perspective and where they're going.
I think it's a good metaphor, even to, you know, back to your political thing. It's like we are wired differently. And if we disregard one another because we're different, it will always create suffering. But if we can see each other as allies and learn from our gifts and strengths, our worldviews, our perspectives, something else becomes possible.
It sure does. And I wish we could get that message through to Mitch McConnell and AOC and get them on the same page and living in each other's shoes and seeing things at least as allies versus completely at war, because it's not a healthy thing. And it doesn't lead to sort of good solutions. It leads to, you know, one side being in power and taking so far to one side, the other side being power, we on the other side. So a little bit of that mutual respect and aligning and walking in the other shoes. And I'd love to see Mitch McConnell walk in AOC's shoes and vice versa. If we can get there, we'd be in a better world. Well, I want to thank you for joining us. Just a pleasure to visit with you. Again, people can find you at lolawright.com, and I assume they can find the podcast, Find Your Fierce Loving, where they listen to podcasts. What a pleasure to visit with you. Lola, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Scott.